Here Be Monsters is a show that invites you to explore fear and the unknown.
I saw her face change. I saw her see where I'd pulled my hair out.
Psychological warfare was always considered kind of an oddity, something done by freaks.
On the count of three, we're literally going to step out of our body. Step out.
You can find Here Be Monsters now at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. From Santa Monica to Boyle Heights, locals are fighting growth.
The policy of the city is to induce growth, and residents have been against that inducement of growth. So Love, or that ballot measure LV, what it does is it sets the limit at 32 feet high.
This is not a battle against art. This is really about displacement. And what the galleries and others need to understand is when you bring galleries into this neighborhood, that starts causing displacement for the long-term tenants.
That's Armin Melkonians in Santa Monica and Elizabeth Blaney in Boyle Heights. Communities in both places are saying no to new development. Are their concerns connected? And is slowing growth the answer to maintaining affordable housing in the most and the least affluent communities in the region? And what does it mean for the next generation of Angelenos?
The LA region projects, I think, about 4 million additional people coming into the area in the next 20 years. They have to live somewhere. And what you have to ask yourself is, where do you want them to be? No is not an answer. No is just pushing the problem somewhere else.
Hear from planner Carl Hansen later, and DNA producer Avishai Artsy brings us a story from the front lines of an anti-development fight in Boyle Heights. First up, let's go to downtown Santa Monica. At 9:30 on a Wednesday night last week, it was packed. People were enjoying the restaurants, cafes and bars on 3rd Street Promenade and on the street level of the urban-scale six-story or so mixed-use buildings that have been built in the neighborhood in recent years.
I've lived in Santa Monica, downtown Santa Monica, for 10 years, and my husband and I chose to live here. Like many of my neighbors in my community, we gave up the suburban sprawl a long time ago, and it's just to walk and live and love living in downtown Santa Monica.
That's Elena Christopoulos. She's a member of Downtown's Neighborhood Association, and I talked with her and Brian Darrow and Jeremy Stutz. We met just off of 3rd Street Promenade.
I am now completely car-free because I moved here. We have great public transportation options and great bike lanes and bike share in Santa Monica. And I think that all culminates in our downtown, where that's most accessible with the Expo line arriving. I want to see more of that.
I've moved here with my kids 3 years ago from Atlanta. And I would love to see the downtown continue to blossom with residents, including families.
Downtown used to be a central business district accessed by cars. Now it's becoming a place to live for over 4,000 residents, both young and old. Amy Utani, Sherry Mattingly, Gary Llewellyn and Ida Riley live in Santa Monica Christian Towers. That's a 13-story residential building for seniors.
Well, listen, I am a block and a half from Whole Foods. I am a block and a half from the Santa Monica Library, a splendid library that's open 7 days a week, which is unheard of. There is Emeritus College. I'm about four blocks away, and that's specifically set up for seniors.
I don't like to live in some place that's confined, and I don't feel confined at all here. We have wonderful mass transit systems. The seniors are in very good health because they walk every place. If you're going to get someplace, you walk, and that's very good.
I think it's a marvelous way to live. I have all this community in the building, and I worked and lived here on this corner for 15 years at Whole Foods and Wild Oats, if you remember that. So I really love that, and I think a lot of more people should have the opportunity to live in a small room with a nice kitchen, a little view, and then you don't have to need a car. You don't have to mow the lawn.
I am so in love with Santa Monica downtown area, and everything that my friends have said I agree with. I get to be entertained down on the promenade. There's wonderful people that know how to sing and do music, and I can go down there most any time and be entertained free.
The folks you've heard from enjoy living in a pedestrian-friendly downtown core, but talk to some residents of the city and they will say a small town is being ruined. One such person is Ron Goldman. He's a member of a group called Santa Monica Architects for a Responsible Tomorrow, or SMART.
I walked out of City Hall the other day. I looked up and saw two buildings that look massive. And they're the two hotels that are the gateway to our city from Expo. It's inexcusable. It's like two more nails in the coffin to the future of Santa Monica.
So you're concerned with the direction Santa Monica's taking?
72% of anticipated growth is for residential. The residences that are being built don't provide a good living standard. Whether I would be single or a family, there's no family space. It's not a living environment, inside or outside.
I ran into Ron Goldman at a recent public workshop held by the Santa Monica Planning Department. It was part of an outreach process aimed at finalizing and adopting a downtown community plan. Now that is a hefty policy document that has been 4 years in the making. It sets the design standards for the city's bustling urban core for everything from sidewalk widths to density levels and future investment in the 229-acre district. And that document in turn has been guided by something called LUCE, or the 2010 Land Use and Circulation Element. I know this all sounds wonky, but do stay with me here. Now, among other goals, the Downtown Community Plan favours preserving and enhancing downtown's basic urban form of 3 to 7 storey buildings and requiring projects above a 2 to 3 storey base height to provide community benefits. Community benefits include the condition that developers incorporate affordable housing units in their market rate projects. But many locals argue that we are not seeing those benefits.
Our city council never can say no to a deal that's offered by the developers, and the residents are choking on traffic.
And so Santa Monica has been telling us that the policy of the city is to induce growth. And residents have been against that inducement of growth.
Armin Melkonians and Tricia Crane are leading a battle to slow growth in Santa Monica. They won a surprise victory when their advocacy group Residocracy fought successfully to stop the Hines development a couple years back. That was a proposed massive mixed-use residential and commercial development at Bergamont Station. Now Melkonians and Crane have written an initiative called LV, also known as LUVE, spelled L-U-V-E. It stands for Land Use Voter Empowerment.
So LUVE, or that ballot measure LV, what it does is it sets the limit at our by right limits of 32 feet high. Everything above 32 feet high gets negotiated by our elected officials, and this gives the voters the final chance to say yes or no after those negotiations.
So does that mean that you want to keep all new development to a height of 2 to 3 stories, which is 32 feet?
No. Our opponents claim that this is a very limiting initiative, but it's not. There's lots of exemptions within the initiative. So affordable housing is not limited to 32 feet. Half of the downtown area will not be limited to 32 feet. There's a number of properties within our housing element that are capable of providing our housing needs that are not limited to 32 feet. And will not require voter approvals.
If the city already is zoned for 32 feet and 75% of properties are already at that level, why does one need LUVE?
Well, because the city is not abiding by that tier one legal limit. They're negotiating huge increases. We have 40 plus projects in the pipeline at City Hall, all that are poised to go beyond that limit.
I mean, in short, the LUVE initiative, I believe, is an extreme measure that would have a lot of unintended consequences.
Jason Islas is Outreach Director for Santa Monica Forward. That's a group of planners, architects, and local residents that opposes the November ballot measure. He believes developers who are pressured out of downtown Santa Monica will go into its older residential neighborhoods and buy multifamily buildings and use Ellis Act evictions to get rid of the rent-controlled units. Armin Melkonians says that is already happening.
The fact is that Ellis Act evictions have tripled over the last 3 years, and there is no ballot measure to limit development, but we've had a frenzy of development. Developers come where the market is hot, And if the market is hot because we're incentivizing growth, that leads to the demolition of the smaller units to build bigger units.
Back to Jason Islas with Santa Monica Forward.
While I do believe that the people who drafted the initiative did have the best intentions, the reality is that they made no provision to provide funding for affordable housing. Now, affordable housing in a place like Santa Monica is very costly to build. Santa Monica has worked very successfully with private developers who, when they build new market rate housing, are required to build at least 30% affordable housing. So over the past several years, nearly 100% of Santa Monica's affordable housing has come as a result of a partnership with the private sector. And the claim that the Love Initiative, by exempting projects that are 100% affordable, did not address the fact that that's a tremendously expensive undertaking.
Now, one source of traffic congestion in Santa Monica is workers commuting in from outside. The Hines development that was stopped by the Love supporters would have included market rate and affordable housing. Now in its place, they're getting a low-rise commercial building with no housing. I asked Armin Melkonians if that was a successful outcome.
Absolutely. It was supposed to be a transit-oriented project. However, it was still generating 7,000 daily new car trips. What's replacing it now is an adaptive reuse project, much better for our environment. It will generate only maybe 2,000 cars. That's a much less impact to our city. And being adjacent to rail, it will allow the workforce to come and work in Santa Monica that lives elsewhere.
So where is elsewhere? Other less affluent Southland communities don't want Westside workers moving into their neighborhoods, as we will hear later in the show. You're listening to DNA. I'm Frances Anderton. While Jason Islas wants planners and developers to work hand in hand, the Love or LV folks say the developers are the problem. Specifically, their frustrations seem to have been kicked off by four projects: the Hines development at Bergamont Station and three on Ocean Avenue. One designed by Frank Gehry, one by Rem Koolhaas, and an expansion of the old Fairmont Miramar Hotel. Rick Cole is city manager for Santa Monica, and I met with him at the workshop that was hosted by Santa Monica Planning Department.
Each of them is unique, but in combination, they really scared the pants off of Santa Monica residents as kind of a symbol of the Manhattanization of the city in the future. I think all of the projects that remain in the wings need to be rethought, and need to be rethought in terms of the context of what's going on around them. And I think that the sponsors of each of the three are listening. They recognize that simply plopping a building that looks good in architecture magazines is not necessarily a building that will contribute to a really remarkable and unique downtown. But what I've argued since becoming city manager over the last year, which I think has resonance well beyond Santa Monica, and particularly resonance in Los Angeles, is the real problem is not the size, the scale, or the mix of uses in projects. The real problem is that we don't have good planning that guarantees up front what the public wants and will put up with, rather than reacting to individual development initiatives by individual developers. I think that's what's poisoned the ability to talk rationally about development. We're trying to come to a common ground so people don't have to have an artificial choice between a very draconian and problematic alternative and a plan that's actually the result of broad-based community consensus.
What is draconian about the alternative?
Well, if Love were to pass, it would be the most complicated and restrictive growth measure of any community of our size in California in history.
You are listening to DNA. The struggle in this beach city echoes one you may have heard of in Los Angeles, the Neighborhood Integrity Initiative. Now, that is a measure intended to go on the ballot next March. It is led by a group called the Coalition to Preserve LA with support from the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and it wants to slow high-density developments of mostly market rate or luxury housing that the group says results from a corrupt system of spot zoning. Well, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation is helping fund LV. Let's go back to Jason Islas of Santa Monica Forward.
It looks a bit to be a bit of a proxy war in that I think the side that says, you know what, no change, we need to freeze the city in time, we need to wrap it in saran wrap, they seem to be seeing what's happening in Santa Monica as perhaps a precursor to what could happen in March or in other places in the Southland and in the country if there's a successful campaign here.
Now, the Love folks will point out that their opposition is getting financial support from real estate interests. Back to Rick Cole, city manager for Santa Monica.
Los Angeles and Santa Monica have very different planning regimes, but they both suffer the same flaw. In Los Angeles, it is planning by council member and having essentially 16 planning directors, 15 of whom are more important than the one who has the title. In Santa Monica, the land use and circulation element, the so-called LUCE, allowed for a tier three that allowed developers to come and negotiate individual approaches to their property in exchange for so-called community benefits. So it put the character that really ought to be determined by plans up for negotiations. The overall vision of the LUCE, which was arrived at through a lot of community consensus, is very powerful and I think would continue to have majority support. But I think it was undermined by this flaw of saying, okay, this is what we want, but we're now going to negotiate with developers to get it. We can't negotiate good urban design. We have to spell out the rules and then we have to stick to them.
That's Rick Cole, city manager for Santa Monica. Opponents of LV or Love say this is much ado about next to nothing. That's because downtown only makes up 4% of the entire city, and the contested development adds up to less than 20% of downtown. Besides, says one of the seniors we spoke to earlier, Ida Riley, who's a member of the Downtown Neighborhood Association.
I think that there is no other answer than to go high in the long run at this stage of our development in society. I would like compromise as much as possible.
That's Ida Riley. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Coming up after this break, we will visit a far less affluent Southland community that is also struggling with development. And we'll find out how the two are connected.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. KCRW relies on member support to help keep our programming fresh and authentic. Find out how you can donate at kcrw.com/join.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. In the first half of this show, we heard about the affluent city of Santa Monica and efforts there to slow development. Turns out they are not alone in their efforts. DNA producer Avishai Artsy went to report on a struggle taking place in the east side community of Boyle Heights. Hello, Avishai.
Hi, Frances.
So first of all, just tell us about Boyle Heights.
Well, Boyle Heights is a predominantly working class community. It's about 95% Latino. It's just east of downtown LA and the Arts District. For many decades, it was known as the most diverse neighborhood. In fact, one census report called it hopelessly heterogeneous, back when that was considered a very bad thing. Side by side, you had Jews, Italians, Japanese, Russians, African Americans, Mexicans, all living together. Many groups started out in LA, in Boyle Heights, and then moved on to other areas like the San Fernando Valley or the San Gabriel Valley. You saw this emptying out happening in the 1950s as a result of redlining. This is where banks refused to give home loans, and then the construction of the freeways in the early 60s. So it's now become predominantly Latino, working class, and there's a strong sense of community there. The Chicano activism movement in the 1970s really came out of Boyle Heights. And now there's this big concern about rent prices going up as they are in much of Northeast LA. And recently, art galleries have become the target of activists.
Why art galleries?
The argument goes that the galleries come in and with them come investment. That brings in higher income people looking to move in. And then the landlords raise the rents to meet this demand. And that displaces longtime residents. Let me turn to Elizabeth Blaney. She's with the tenant rights group Union de Vecinos. They were founded about 20 years ago to stop the demolition of the Aliso Village public housing project. And her group is part of a broader coalition called BAD, which stands for Boyle Heights Alliance Against Art Washing and Displacement.
And really what the goal is that we want the galleries in Boyle Heights to leave. And what people need to understand, this is not a battle against art or against culture. Boyle Heights is rich in all art and culture for years. When you bring galleries into this neighborhood, that starts causing displacement for the long-term tenants who have been here. And I think people have to understand this in the context of what's going on in Boyle Heights. If you look at Boyle Heights, you have on the south side the Rivenwood development and Sears. Between those two projects, there's going to be 5,150 units of luxury market rate housing. And then you come along the river on the west side, and you have the river development, you have the galleries right along there, you have the demolition of the 6th Street Bridge, which the construction of that is going to connect everybody to the Arts District downtown. And then on the north side, you have the metro development of its 8 lots and the hotel that's going up. So we are encircled by development. And so when you just look at the galleries and how they're contributing to all of that, collectively, it's causing a lot of problems for rent increases here in Boyle Heights and displacing tenants.
Now, the counter argument to that is that art galleries attract tourism, attract new business, attract visitors who spend money in local restaurants and shops, and that they can bring new life and new hope into a community.
Right, right. But it has become really combustible. I mean, what's been seen is that you've had groups going in who have been kind of scared away. They've come to look at new properties. They've been enticed by realtors who've gone into Boyle Heights saying there's cheap property here. And folks like Elizabeth Blaney are not welcoming these groups. Now, there is another group that has roots in Boyle Heights for decades, and that group has also been on the receiving end of the anger.
Yeah, you're talking about this nonprofit called Self-Help Graphics and Art. This was a group that was founded 43 years ago by a Franciscan nun named Sister Karen Bocalero. She studied under Sister Carita Kent at Immaculate Heart College, and her group was largely founded to promote Chicano self-empowerment through art. So this is not a gallery, really. It's an art space that leads youth programs with schools. They host free art workshops and, you know, screen printing classes. Part of the reason they've been targeted is that they have not been in Boyle Heights continuously. They were in a different part of East LA, and then they moved back into Boyle Heights 5 years ago when their rents went up. So they moved into this renovated fish processing plant across from a Metro Gold Line station. So in fact, they've also felt the impact of rising rents too.
And they've been treated as kind of newbies.
Yeah, that's Elizabeth Blaney sort of lumps them in with the rest of the galleries, as saying, look, they just got here too.
So how are the gallery owners, the who've moved in relatively recently, how are they reacting to all of this?
Well, as you can imagine, they feel unfairly targeted, and they feel like they're doing a lot for the community. For example, Eva Cimento owns Cimento Contemporary Gallery in Boyle Heights, which opened last summer.
Well, at first I was surprised and very emotional. I feel like as I've poured my heart and soul into my space, and I've poured my heart and soul, I thought, into, you know, the people I hired, which are all Boyle Heights residents. I felt compassion for them, and the feelings that they were trying to convey to me, I felt as though it was my fault that they were going through this, until I took a step back and realized it wasn't.
You don't think it's your fault that housing prices are going up in Boyle Heights?
Not at all. In fact, I'm going to be in the same position they are when my lease is up. I'm already looking for other avenues in other places, just in case.
And this is, by the way, the second gallery that Eva's opened in the last couple of years. She had a gallery in Hollywood, and then she got priced out of that neighborhood. That's just one gallery. I mean, the one that I think has gotten the most attention is this new nonprofit called PSST, or P-S-S-S-T. And they've been targeted by protesters, even though they've tried to focus on, you know, promoting artists of color and low-income artists. They actually had to delay their opening because of these protests, and now they're not talking to the press at all because of all the negative reactions regarding, you know, this accusation of art washing.
So is this issue really about the galleries and art washing, or is it about the cost of living, specifically the cost of housing?
You can't separate what's happening with the galleries from what's happening historically and geographically. I mean, this really goes back many years. I mean, you can go back to the fight over the demolition of Aliso Village in the late 90s. There's also the issue of Wyvernwood, the garden apartment complex. This is 70 acres in Boyle Heights, this beautiful area that was built in the 1930s. I went to visit there. Actually, I met with Rigo Amavisca, who's part of a group called Somos Wyvernwood. He's also in Defend Boyle Heights, which is sort of one of the lead groups that's opposing the art galleries. And he gave me a little tour of the neighborhood.
Wyvernwood is LA's first garden apartment community. It is right now it's in danger of being demolished because developers from Miami have proposed to demolish every building you see here to build high-rise luxury condominiums.
And what I'm looking at are two-story affordable apartment buildings.
Rent-stabilized apartment buildings.
Rent-stabilized, okay.
So, like, we've been here for about 40 years, and we pay just under $1,000 for a three-bedroom, two-story. You know, if you want to look inside, it's pretty cozy.
So we went into his house, and it was very cozy. I mean, well, here you have a three-bedroom, two-story house for under $1,000 a month, just a stone's throw from downtown. I mean, that's pretty good, and you can understand why people want to keep those.
And you can understand why developers might look at that and think, fantastic site to create some market rate apartments.
Exactly. And that's what's going on. I mean, almost a decade ago, this Miami developer came in called the 15 Group, and they proposed this $2 billion mixed use project so that it would be commercial space and, you know, luxury condos, but they would also have a component of it, about 15%, that would be affordable units. And those people who are still living there now would be the first to get a chance to move back in. Now, tenants there, including Rigo, say that the developers are allowing the place to kind of fall apart with the hope that people will just leave on their own. Rigo's group, Somos Wyvernwood, wants the place repaired and rehabbed rather than demolished.
Did he buy into the argument that the luxury development could include a portion of affordable that he would be eligible to move into?
He's skeptical that the rents would still be as affordable as they are now. What's happening in Boyle Heights may not exactly mirror what's happening in other areas in terms of the targeting of art galleries, but I think that frustration over rising rent prices and then displacement of low-income people is something that's happening throughout Los Angeles and throughout the region.
Well, Avishai Artsy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Francis.
You're listening to DNA, and as you heard, we've been talking about anti-development fights that are taking place from as far west as Santa Monica to Boyle Heights in the east. To what extent are these fights connected, and can they be solved neighborhood by neighborhood? Carl Hansen is the Government Affairs Director for the Santa Monica Chamber of Commerce. He's lived in Santa Monica for 4 years.
Oftentimes, I think locally, we are kind of trapped in our bubble, and we're not thinking about the needs for housing in the larger area and the impacts on traffic from people coming into places like Santa Monica, where the population has grown very little over the past few decades, but the number of jobs has greatly increased. So we have people coming in from the outside. You can't afford to live here because the demand's so high and the supply's so low. And you get this kind of, it's a classic economic problem that has a clear solution. It's more housing supply. And there are right ways to do that and there are wrong ways to do that. The LA region projects, I think, about 4 million additional people coming into the area in the next 20 years. They have to live somewhere. And what you have to ask yourself is, where do you want them to be? No is not an answer. No is just pushing the problem somewhere else. And I think we have to have an intelligent conversation about that if we want that to work.
It was Carl Hansen. He's Government Affairs Director for the Santa Monica Chamber of Commerce. I'm Frances Anderton. That's it for today's DNA. Avishai Artsy is the show's producer. J.C. Swatek mixed this episode. Special thanks to Jason Groman and Stephanie Case. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned for The World, coming up next.